On behalf of Leinberg Information Services, welcome to an overview of financial planning for deferred comp and compensatory stock options. I'm Bob Keebler, and I'll be your host. When you're working with corporate executives, one of the biggest challenges you're going to face is non-qualified deferred compensation from a financial planning perspective. What I won't talk about today are the intricacies of the 409A rules. If you are going to be representing someone putting together a deferred compensation, you want to make sure you get very specialized CPAs and lawyers that understand 409 Cap A of the code. This is a relatively new section. There are people that now spend 80% of their time writing these agreements. There are a number of rules you have to comply with under 409A. You want to be very careful. What we're going to talk about today, though, is the basics of non-qualified deferred compensation and compensatory stock options. So an outline, what will we go through? First of all, we'll talk about the income taxation of non-qualified deferred comp. We'll look at the FICA taxation of non-qualified deferred comp. We'll provide an overview of the compensatory stock options. And finally, we'll wrap up with some big picture thoughts on the financial planning issues associated with non-qualified deferred comp. Now, many of the executives I've represented over time have had a number of different deferred compensation packages. It's not unusual for someone to come to see me and there's a compensation package, a DC plan, that was granted in a number of different years. Some of these plans are simply, I'm deferring my own salary. I'm making $500,000 a year and I put $200,000 away, so I only have to pay tax on $300,000, which is smart to a point, especially if I can diversify, but I'm still a general creditor of the company. I'm still a general creditor of the company. Now, when you're representing an executive, you want to understand deferred compensation first from the company's perspective. Now, deferred compensation can be discriminatory. That means that we can carve out the top 1 or 2% of our executive group and give them a real incentive to make things happen. Generally, now, this is not heavily regulated by ERISA, the DOL, and the IRS. There are exceptions to that. We want to make sure we're involving deferred comp experts when companies are putting these plans together. We can customize this. One of the nice things about this, it can be forfeited if an executive leaves the company or is fired for cause. Now, disadvantages. No current income tax deduction for the accrued liability or for the expense of the benefits. From the employee's perspective, deferral of tax. Okay, just like an IRA or qualified plan, you pick up deferral of tax, which I think is important when you're working through all this. Disadvantages, security of future benefits. Okay, so you have a great risk of forfeiture. If you were an Enron executive or a WorldCom executive, a Lehman executive, a Bear Stearns executive, you lost a lot of money when your deferred comp plan fell apart. So I represented a gentleman that was fairly high up in Bear Stearns, and Bear Stearns, sure enough, went out of business, and he lost millions and millions of dollars of deferred comp and options. Serious, serious stuff. So that is an advantage that is a real disadvantage you run when you are a corporate executive and you try to put quite a bit of wealth either by deferral or by virtue of special incentives the company gives you into a deferred compensation plan. Now, a non-qualified deferred compensation plan is a legally binding agreement between an executive and his or her employee where the executive chooses to defer a portion of compensation to be paid in a later year. Now, sometimes these plans, I'm making a decision to shelter a portion of my income. Sometimes these plans, I'm not making the decision at all, but the company is giving me a supplemental retirement plan or some type of supplemental incentive plan to make all this work. The result of this is the employee does not pay income tax on the front end, and you'll pay income tax later when the dollars come out. Now think about this strategically. You're making $800,000 a year, you're in the top bracket, you defer $300,000, and you take that out once you're well retired, and some of that will be taxed at 15 or 25% rather than 35. You pay you get the deduction in the shelter when you're living up in New York or LA or Chicago, and you take it out after you've moved back home to Dallas, where there's no tax in the state of Texas. These are things that you want to put into the equation, but never lose track of that you're a general creditor, and if the company has financial trouble, you're going to lose this wealth. So there is a substantial risk of forfeiture we need to be very cognizant of. Now, non-qualified deferred comp is generally designed to cover a group of employees or just one employee. Can be worked into an employment contract. It can stipulate a certain time for payment, termination of employment, retirement, disability, death. The amount paid is normally stated as a specified percentage of the compensation, salary, or corporate profits, generally formula-driven. Death of an executive with deferred comp can be a problem. You want to make sure those beneficiary designation forms make great sense when integrated into the rest of a person's estate plan. So, you know, we've represented people with very large deferred compensation plans, and oftentimes if they die, the money's going to come out of that deferred compensation plan within 5 years. You're going to have to make sure, how is that going to work through the overall estate plan? Should that be paid to a charitable trust? For example, we represented one executive who was very, very ill in his early 50s, and his wife was 4 or 5 years younger than he was. We had that deferred comp payable to a charitable remainder trust. And when he died, that charitable trust received the deferred comp. The beauty of that is there was no tax up front, and then she received distributions over her life expectancy from the charitable trust. We avoided losing 40% of that up front to tax. Now, deferred compensation, one of the problems, it's subject to the claims of the employer's general creditors. So basically, if there's trouble, you're going to stand with all the other general creditors. You can get wiped out pretty easily. Oftentimes, they will contain a forfeiture clause, which will cause the employee to lose his or her benefit if certain events occur, gross misconduct, voluntary termination, etc. The employee cannot borrow against this or pledge this or assign his or her interest in the deferred comp plan. This wealth is truly deferred, and it's very hard to get to. Typical features, vesting. There's going to be a vesting period of time. Sometimes people have cliff vesting, not for their own funds, not for the portion they've deferred out of their given salary or provided salary, but for the extra portion the company's doing. Perhaps the company provides some type of match. There can be forfeiture provisions with non-competes, misconduct. You have to watch out for that. What do these contracts say? If your client works for a company with 500 executives, unless he or she is one of the top 20 people, they're not going to be able to negotiate much on these deferred comp agreements. On the other hand, if your client is the general manager of a big automobile dealership and he's just negotiating one-on-one with the owner, you want to make sure your client is represented by very sharp lawyers who understand this area so they can minimize his risk of forfeiture. Distribution provisions, lump sum distributions when I retire, that could be a disaster. Maybe I can take my funds out over a term of years. We're going to talk about that. There's an incentive, especially if you're going to be moving from a high tax state to a lower tax state. Federal law provides that if you take the funds out over a period of 10 or more years, your original state where you worked, New York, California, etc., Illinois, cannot tax you after you move to another state. Key items you have to consider when you're putting these together is change in control agreements. You want to make sure if the company's taken over, your guy doesn't get beat up in that and lose some of his deferred comp. We also want to look at what else can go into these deferred compensation plans. Many times when I represent a new client with these plans, they're going to have restricted stock units, they might have phantom stock, they might have stock appreciation rights, sometimes called SARs. You're going to be looking at, sometimes they can buy stock at discounted prices. Very often, if they need additional insurance, top executives are going to have split dollar agreements with the company. There can be a lot of moving parts to this that require a tremendous amount of your attention. So there are two types of plans. There's the elective plan. In the elective plan, that's a type of non-qualified deferred compensation plan. initiated by the employee who is electing to defer compensation that would otherwise be earned and received in the future. And then there is a non-elective plan. That's the golden handcuff type of plan where I am the chairman of the board and you're the CEO. I want you to stay. You're doing a great job. I need to make it difficult for you to leave, so I'm going to make it so that you want to stay, because by staying, you're going to be paid quite a bit of money at some point in time in the future. So that's typically going to be initiated by the employer, by a board that's concerned about losing a key executive if he or she is doing a great job. There are funded plans and unfunded plans. Many of the plans are going to be unfunded, just a general credit of the corporation. Sometimes you're going to have a funded plan where the corporation actually places assets aside for the benefit of the employee through the use of rabbi trusts, escrow accounts, annuities, life insurance products. Those, although that's smart because they're, basically setting up a fund, a restricted fund, that restricted fund is still not protected from the claims of the corporation's creditors. The other thing to understand here is the assets here do not receive the same asset protection as an ERISA plan in the event that your client is personally sued. Unfunded plan, it's basically your client agrees to perform future services for the employee in exchange for an unsecured promise to pay future compensation. And unlike the funded plan, the assets used to pay these obligations are going to come from the employer's general funds and are going to be subject to the sponsor's creditors. At no time are assets specifically set aside for the employee, so that's a problem. Again, there can be an account balance plan, and that's where the employee benefits consist solely of principal, credit to the participant, and any income available to that. In these account balance plans, sometimes you are required to invest in corporation stock, which brings you back into the non-balanced portfolio, the diversification problem. Sometimes you're allowed to set up a nice balanced portfolio inside that deferred compensation plan. Generally, although it's very enticing to invest in the corporation stock, we prefer to see people invest in a much more broad-based portfolio, reducing some of that risk of the one company position. Now, non-account balance plan, the benefit is indeterminable until a future event. So maybe it depends upon the value of the stock on the day I retire. Hard to compute that value. Now let's talk briefly about the income taxation of non-qualified deferred comp. The employee is taxed when the compensation is received, not when it's deferred. That's the beauty of how this works. Okay, so that's the absolute beauty of how this works. I do not pay tax until I actually take this out. One of the advantages here is I might be well retired before I take this out. On the other hand, the employer doesn't get a deduction until that point in time. On behalf of Lineberg Information Services, this has been Bob Keebler, and thank you for joining us today.